Christianity in this country has become almost synonymous with right-wing fanaticism, conservative politics, and, courtesy of Mel Gibson, a brutally sadistic version of religious experience. Millions of Christians like me are appalled by this distortion of our faith, which only three decades ago stood for peace, equality, healing, and compassion for society's outcasts, the issues that comprise the ministry of Jesus. Those are the opening words of The Hijacking of Jesus by Dan Wakefield. I'm Dave Mazza, and we're going to be spending the next 45 minutes talking with Dan about this remarkable book he's just written about how the religious right distorts Christianity and promotes prejudice and hate. And good morning, Dan. Thank you for coming here to KBOO.
Good morning. I'm very glad to be here.
Well, this is quite a unique book in that I think it takes a different tact that many books looking at the political impacts of the religious rights do. I mean, you sort of jump into a certain amount of analysis of actually the theological aspects of what's happening. And perhaps you could talk a little bit about that, about what impact the right is having on the core values of Christianity.
Well, I think the impact is they have really been trying and in many ways succeeding in splitting denominations and congregations themselves by bringing in what they call the wedge issues of stirring people up over the issues of abortion and gay rights and gay marriage. Those are the emotional issues that get people stirred up and trying to divide communities. And also, there's a lot of really, to my mind, strange theologies out there, like the dispensationalists, who, for instance, believe history is divided into different eras or dispensations. And according to them, the era or dispensation we're living in right now, the Sermon on the Mount, doesn't count. And really, part of the reason the book came about was seeing all these headlines that you and I and everybody else has been seeing for the last five or so years, headlines with the word Christian that always means the right wing. It means that it's a bashing of gays and lesbians. And it is not, it kind of features a kind of intolerance, which they're proud of. And that, to me, is the opposite of the message of Jesus.
Well, you know, I think most folks who are, you know, observing this phenomenon, or just members of the general public, you know, they're getting this message through a few key people, people like Jerry Falwell or Pat Robertson. Here locally, we have our own homegrown versions of the same phenomenon. And I think there's an assumption that there's been a process and a sort of official stamp of approval put on these people's version of Christianity, when in fact, it's really my sense from reading your book and what I've observed on my own is these guys are really kind of leading it without going back and saying, you know, there's any real authority behind what they say. I mean, it's
right.
It's run like a PR campaign.
That's right. Well, and it's not just Falwell and Robinson. They're the most publicized examples. But the National Religious Broadcasters has 1,600 radio stations, and the Focus on the Family alone, one of the very right wing shows, has something like 1 million listeners in 99 countries. They've been building this up for the last 25 years while the mainline Protestantism has really slumbered through this and now is finally waking up at last.
Why do you think that those of us in the press and people like yourself who are spending a lot of time, you know, examining these things, I mean, we're not really representative of the average person who's sitting down and, you know, getting through their day and on Sunday decide to go and worship in their particular fashion and whatever time they spend on considering things about God and what have you. What do you think it is that is drawing them towards these conservative messages rather than towards the, you know, more traditional mainstream church messages?
Well, I think, as is always the case, that extreme messages are more dramatic. They offer more quick fix solution. Just believe this way and everything will be fine. But one of the reasons that I wrote the book is that I was at a retreat, for instance, a Christian mainstream Protestant religious retreat, and we were talking about, the minister leading the retreat started talking about the words of Jesus, and one of the women who belongs to an Episcopal church said, well, I don't like the way his words are being used now by the right wing, and it's not the Christianity that I'm accustomed to. So when you get things like Senator Bill Frist supporting Bush's Supreme Court nominees and saying he speaks for people of faith, that is really a falsification, and I think a lot of people of faith are getting tired of that.
Let me just step in here and say, for folks who are just tuning in, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm Dave Mazza, and I'm here with sort of a froggy voice, I'm afraid, talking with Dan Wakefield about his latest book, The Hijacking of Jesus, How the Religious Right Distorts Christianity and Promotes Prejudice and Hate. And before we get back to Dan, I want to let folks know that there is an event coming up this Sunday on June 11th here at Portland at St. Andrew's Church, honoring our Indigenous Women Activist Speaking Tour. It's going to feature Carrie Dan, Western Shoshone Nation, Louise Benali of Dene Nation, Big Mountain, speaking on human rights, environmental justice, multinational accountability, Nevada test site bombing, sovereignty, treaty rights, and United Nations declarations. And that's going to be at St. Andrew's Church, 806 Northeast Alberta, starting at 7 p.m. Looks like the contribution to get in is $5 to $20 sliding scale. And for more information, you can check out wsdp.org, or that's probably the most easiest website to go. So sounds like a worthwhile event to catch, and might want to spend your evening that way. But let's get back now to Dan. One of the things I'm curious about, you know, I'm thinking back, for me, early 70s, what was termed sort of, I don't know not termed necessarily in the most complimenting fashion, but people called the Jesus freak a phenomenon, mm-hmm. when lots of people were suddenly being drawn to, away from sort of a rational approach to looking at the worldview and being drawn into this more, you know, a perspective that included things like speaking in tongues and being drawn into ceremonies that rose people, kind of took people up out of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that, and I'm not sure if that was what that was a reaction to or how the 60s, you know, brought that about, but do you think that sort of sense of looking for something beyond a more rational approach to things has had a play in the way that the religious right has formed, or at least its support?
Well, I think that's one aspect of it, and I think that particularly after 9/11, people naturally are looking for more solid, all-encompassing answers of the kind the religious right provides. What bothers me is the real intolerance by so many of that group. And one of their favorite books now is a book called Be Intolerant. Actually, I didn't think you needed any lessons to know how to be intolerant. But and I was on a TV program in Sarasota, Florida recently, where somebody from the Christian Coalition was there, and I said, well, how can you be a Christian and say that people should be intolerant? And he said, oh, but we're only intolerant of sinners. But the hitch is, who gets to decide who are the sinners? And it turns out to be those people who are wanting to brand sinners. And again, it's very, very ironic when you think of Jesus. One of his famous teachings was telling the crowd, let him who has the first sin cast the first stone.
Yeah, I mean, hate the sin, not the sinner, is kind of a basic concept. There's also been some interesting developments in the way, I mean, you call them the mega churches.
Right.
Maybe talk a little bit about that for our listeners.
Well, the mega churches have appealed to, really, I think, to a lot of new suburbs, people who don't have friends or family when they move to a new place in the Southwest and in Florida, that those places have grown up. And they have an appeal because a lot of the mega churches provide almost a whole life experience of, you know, they not only have Sunday services, but even something every evening of the week, you could just fill up your life with these activities. But again, the one that the ones that follow Falwell and Robertson, I think, really do spread this message of hate. And in fact, Pat Robertson, speaking about the Protestant mainline churches and congregations, said, "People tell me I have to be nice to Episcopals, Methodists, and Presbyterians, but why do I have to be nice to the Antichrist?" So, in other words, anyone that's not in his view is the Antichrist. And this kind of thing, I think, is really damaging to the country.
Now, the conservatives in this country have in the past allied themselves with the religious right. I mean, Ronald Reagan was quite effective at doing that. And, I mean, you can even look prior, you know, earlier than that. I mean, Father Coughlin was a political force for conservatives in this country during the Depression. But, you know, Ronald Reagan in particular was quite adept at currying the favor of the religious right without really giving away too much in return. And I know eventually a lot of people became, and the religious right became, quite disillusioned with him over that. And now we have, of course, George Bush, who seems to be, you know, doing the same, well, at least aligning himself quite closely or identifying himself with the religious right.
Mm.
How much different is it this time around with this president, and what difficulties are we going to have in dealing, you know, trying to pull ourselves back from the direction that that's leading us to?
Well, I think that that the Bush presidency has, I don't agree with most of its policies, and I am a Christian, but I feel that there's a danger in these faith-based efforts. The faith-based efforts where then it's judged, well, how much faith do you have? And if you're not a person of this faith, you can't work in this particular program. And I think that's dangerous. Also, because I subscribed, when I started writing The Hijacking of Jesus, I subscribed to a lot of religious magazines and got on religious right mailing lists. And one of them, which was said it was from John Ashcroft, the fact it's signed by him, former attorney general, and urges people, and this is, I'm quoting from the letter, "If you know of any left-wing actions or policies, campus outrages at your alma mater or at colleges and universities in your area, please write them here, and space is provided. If more space is needed and you want to talk to someone, they give you an 800 number." And so it's really back to the kind of McCarthyism, spying on your neighbors and dividing communities. And that's one of the hallmarks of what seems to be going on now in the religious right.
Now, some folks, and you raised this issue as well, say, of course, that also applies to the Bush foreign policies, that there are certainly people within the administration who are, I guess, the dispensationalists, who, you know, see the interest in the Middle East in particular as playing out of some sort of grand cosmic plan.
Yes, they do. And, in fact, they're anxious to have the final battle or Armageddon. And, as you know, the whole series of books called the Left Behind books, which are based on that, the idea that the good people will be swept up into heaven in what they call the rapture, and then the others will be left in this gigantic battle on Earth. It's really a lot like science fiction, but they've incorporated it into a kind of weird theology.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's easy to sort of laugh a lot of this stuff off because mm-hmm. it's so ludicrous and so far removed from anything that we would consider legitimate spirituality. And yet, you know, as you point out in the book, it's, you know, just in with some of the examples you gave, this is, you know, seated pretty deeply in there.
And by the way, I was amazed to know that the Left Behind books, there's a whole series of those books based on that idea that the good people will be immediately swept up into heaven,
mm-hmm.
and then there'll be a battle between the forces of good and evil on Earth. And those books have sold 60 million copies. They're bigger bestsellers than Stephen King. So it's had a tremendous following.
I know. I mean, it's the sort of thing where you're in the check stand at the grocery store and you realize the conversation behind you is not about the new Danielle Steele novel, but
right.
about this Left Behind series. And, you know, again, it's people who aren't a poor part of the sort of stereotype you have in mind.
Mm.
Do you find that the religious right phenomenon nowadays, does it break out any other different ways? I mean, is there, you know, north, south, you know, are there geographical differences in how this is playing out?
Not really. I mean, I think that the religious right is probably strongest in the south, in the southwest. They've some of the original mega churches are in Florida, in Fort Lauderdale in particular. I went to one of those mega churches. I went to several mega churches. The one in Florida by a minister named D. James Kennedy, who was one of the founders of the Moral Majority. And I heard something there that I have never before in my life heard in a church. I've been to many different Protestant churches, and never heard this, where they were about to have communion, and Reverend Kennedy said, "We like people to participate in this church in almost all our activities, but only those should participate in this communion, the Lord's Supper, if you have been born again, if you are part of our family in Christ." And he names about 10 qualifications you have to have. And he said, and if you don't have those qualifications and you partake of the Lord's Supper, you will find yourself becoming very ill. And many is the tombstone that has on it, "This person partook of the Lord's Supper and was not qualified to do so." So in other words, if you went up and took communion and you weren't part of their group and philosophy, you're going to die. And again, it sounds kooky, but I sat there and wrote it all down. Then I assure you, I didn't take communion there. I fled.
I think that's exactly what I would have been doing as well. I mean, this is, you know, it's moving into the realm of cults as opposed to religion, it seems. But let's talk about what we need to be doing. People who are, you know, see this as a danger to the entire mm-hmm. spiritual health of the nation,
mm-hmm.
and who feel that, you know, there's this other Jesus, as you say. How to get Jesus back out of the hostage status? What do you see the mainstream churches is what they should be doing?
Well, I think it's difficult for the mainstream churches because they are up against battling at all of their conventions and denominational meetings, battling the religious right on the wedge issues of abortion and gay rights. I interviewed the head of the National Council of Churches, Robert Edgar, and he says the National Council of Churches has started a website called Faithful America. And I asked him if he had started that in response to the religious right, and he said almost everything we do is in response to the religious rite. So that shows how it has sapped the energy and become the focus of things that take away from the kind of social activism that was more common in the 60s. And in fact, the one of the things that shocked me into writing The Hijacking of Jesus was that remembering that in the 60s, when you saw Christians in headlines, it was usually about Christians supporting the civil rights movement or the work of Dr. Martin Luther King, and then later than that, Christians in protests against the war in Vietnam and against the draft. So it was a whole different kind of image of Christianity than what's come about today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we seem to be, for example, here in Portland, which has a number of very progressive churches, and yet we seem to still be stumbling over some of these wedge issues. I mean,
yes,
various attacks on lesbians, gays, and transgendered people, for example.
Yes.
Even amongst churches that may be active in the civil rights movement, mm-hmm. when the gay issue is raised, it brings things to a grinding halt. And how do we talk through that to those churches? How do we get to the congregations on that?
Well, I think the congregations are divided over that. I belong to a church that is part of the United Church of Christ, and they have a policy of what they call open and affirming, where each church, the congregation votes to be open and affirming to gays, lesbians, and sexual minorities, as well as to any race or ethnic background. And oddly enough, they had a commercial showing people being turned away from some churches and accepted in the United Church of Christ. And one of the networks would not run this commercial, saying it was too controversial. And all the commercial was saying was, let's accept everybody who wants to come to church. So I guess they felt, again, the power of the religious right as the audience is too much to contend with. At least that's what one of the major networks decided.
Well, we, of course, also it's not just not all the real hot button issues like abortion and gay rights, but even the way the peace protests have unfolded, for example, in this city, mm-hmm. we've certainly seen a lot of divisions. I mean, we've seen white liberal churches turn out, but not nearly as much coming together with other churches representing other communities here. The Catholic Church has largely been absent, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. at least if you look at what the Vatican has said on occasion about this, I mean, there's been some good justification for Catholics to be out there.
Yeah. Right? Well, there are, in the last year or so, there are a number of interdenomination and interfaith groups. One of the interesting ones is called the Network of Spiritual Progressives. It was started by Rabbi Michael Lerner. They recently had a conference in Washington, D.C., with representatives of all denominations, and the Washington Post really took it seriously, and in fact the Washington Post ran a story on the front page. The first sentence was, "The religious left is back." So I find that very helpful, very hopeful, and that comes out of Rabbi Michael Lerner and his own interfaith and Jewish magazine called Tikkun, T-I-K-K-U-N, and then Jim Wallace, who wrote God's Politics, Why the Right Gets It Wrong and the Left Doesn't Get It. And Jim Wallace is a progressive evangelical, and with the base of his magazine, Sojourners, they've done a great deal, too. And in fact, Wallace is part of a group of evangelicals who just a couple months ago declared themselves split from the National Association of Evangelicals because they don't want any more to be associated with Falwell and Robertson. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a very important development.
Yeah, that's important signs of change. Before we we're going to open up the phones here in just about a minute or so, so folks can join us in this conversation. But the boys down at the FCC like me to remind folks that you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm Dave Mazza, and I'm here today with Dan Wakefield, the author of, well, many books, but his most current one is The Hijacking of Jesus, How the Religious Right Distorts Christianity and Promotes Prejudice and Hate. And if you want to join us and ask Dan a question, give us a call at 503-231-8187. We'll have about 15 minutes to take calls, so I ask folks to make their statements, their questions brief, and that way we can have Dan have spending most of the time talking rather than myself or the caller. And before we get any phone calls going, I want to remind folks that Dan will actually be speaking at a number of venues. You're going to be at the First Unitarian Church tonight at 7:30 p.m. It's a benefit for the, People for the American Way and the, my handwriting is getting so bad, Interfaith Alliance. And that's going to be suggested contribution of $10 to $20, sliding scale. That's the First Unitarian Church downtown on 12th and Main. And let's see, tomorrow is Augustana Lutheran Church, 9:30 a.m. to noon. It's going to be a conversation group in the Fireside Room in Augustana Lutheran Church. Is at Knott and 14th Avenue, Northeast 14th Avenue. And then there's a Sunday event at Tualatin United United Methodist Church. And I believe that we have the information up at the front desk if folks want to find out the specifics on those. I unfortunately have just my scrawled notes. So, at any rate, again, like I say, let's just remind folks you're listening to KBOO, Portland, and let's open up the phone lines if we have a caller. Good morning, caller.
Thanks, Dave, for this wonderful wonderful show.
Oh, you're welcome.
And thanks for the legal ID. To your guest, I have a mother who is almost 80 now, and she joined the fundamentalist movement first in the megachurch concept and then in a separate storefront church concept, which she's been in for 20 years, and I would love to convince her that she should not vote Republican, as she...
Well, she's probably hearing otherwise from the pulpit. And this is something very strange, phenomenon, that a number of religious right churches seem able to support Republican Party, Republican initiatives. In fact, the religious right, one political scientist says, has become an appendage of the Republican Party. But the least controversial statement by a liberal church, and they're in trouble. And in fact, just recently, All Saints Episcopal Church in Pasadena, California, had a speaker, wasn't even the regular minister, but someone speaking critically of the war in Iraq, and a week later the IRS contacted them and said they were violating their religious status of neutrality. So there seems to be a double standard for churches in political matters.
Okay, well, thank you, caller, for that question. And let's bring on our next caller for Dan. Good morning, caller.
Hello.
Hello.
What dawns on me is that the people in the religious right have really managed to put themselves in the position that the Pharisees were in relation to Jesus. And that it's left out of our contemporary understanding of the Bible is that when Jesus was talking to everybody, there was a rebellion that was growing in Palestine that the with the Zealot Rebellion that resulted in the Romans destroying Jerusalem in 70 AD, and that all of the Jews assumed that Jesus was going to be the leader of that rebellion, including all of his disciples, and that when he didn't do that, they felt really let down, and this all gets left out of everybody's understanding of what Christianity was about.
Well, I think to me what Christianity is about can be summarized in the Sermon on the Mount. And yeah. It's shocking to me that any group calling themselves Christian would say that that does not apply to the age we live in. But I think there are a lot of distortions, and I think a lot of the times the fundamentalists say, well, we're just biblical literalists. We're speaking whatever is in the Bible exactly as it is. But as somebody, one of their critics said, they're really not literalists. They're selectivists. And they select which passages uphold their stand and don't mention the others. I heard Bishop Shelby Spong of the Episcopal Church speak on this matter, and he said selectivist fundamentalists are very careful about the things from the Bible that they don't choose to broadcast or to put into effect. One of them being, he says, in Deuteronomy, it says that you can be put to death for having sex with your mother-in-law. And as Bishop Spong said, well, the trouble with that one is you would first have to imagine it. But so that might not be a big deal. But again, it's using selected texts from the Bible to promote their own particular agenda.
Thank you, caller, for your question and query on that. Folks calling in or want to call in and ask Dan a question, give us a call at 503-231-8187. We're talking with Dan Wakefield, author of The Hijacking of Jesus, How the Religious Right Distorts Christianity and Promotes Prejudice and Hate. There used to be, I don't know if they're still doing, someone used to publish the list from Deuteronomy and Numbers of the selected, you know, of the rules that were dropped out by the religious right, which was often quite humorous because of things like that.
By the way, one of the things that's very heartening to me is that Jim Wallace and other progressive evangelicals that formed a new group, they're calling themselves red letter Christians. And what they mean by that is they're saying, let's just get back to the words of Jesus as presented in the Gospels and in many New Testaments. The words of Jesus are printed in red. So that's what they're talking about. Let's forget all the complicated theories about Armageddon and all that stuff and get back to the teachings of Jesus. I think that's a very healthy development.
I'm sure the religious right will have a different interpretation on that red letter.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Let's bring on our next caller. Good morning, caller.
Yeah. Hi, good morning. Could you speak a little bit about the relationship of the religious right and the Zionist movement, or, you know, if that's an unfair categorization, but just the efforts to affect the political outcomes in Palestine and Israel?
Well, I think that there's the religious right, the most rabid of them, are donating huge amounts of money to Israel, not really because they are the greatest friends of Israel, but because as part of their theology is Armageddon has to take place, and for that to happen, according to biblical prophecy as they see it, the Jews have to recover their holy places. And so it's sort of an odd thing that they say they're friends of the Jews, but in this theology it ends up that the Jews are destroyed. But getting there to the point where they rule the temple is part of this strange theology that's built around the book of Revelation.
Try your call again or contact customer.
Well, let's bring on our next caller, who's not a recording, we assume. Good morning, caller.
Good morning. My name's Tom.
Hi, Tom. Got a question for Dan?
Yeah, and I'll take the answer off the air. Just as some people misinterpret Scripture for their own, you know, psychological understanding, I believe that Jesus perhaps was misunderstood. Just as psychology, we like to project our problems or answers on other people instead of taking the responsibility in us. Jesus a lot said, it's your faith that heals you. People look to Jesus, but he's the doorway to get people to have their faith through themselves. And I noticed the prophets in old, they always called Jesus a prophet. And even in Scripture, you know, the Bible, it's in red where Jesus speaks. And even like in Matthew will call Jesus the Son of God, the Son of God. And then he quotes from Jesus, and Jesus says, I'm the Son of Man. And Jesus must have made such a strong impression to say, I'm the Son of Man, that he's quoted correctly. So I just think that's interesting that people are looking to Jesus as the Son of God to fix everything for him. And he's trying to say, I'm the Son of Man as yourself, that all the prophets said, God will send a prophet like Moses. And I believe Jesus wants us to have God coming through us, but a lot of people, escapism, want to put it all onto Jesus to do it for them. And I can take your thoughts off the air.
Oh, well, they don't have to be off the air. I think this is very personal. What you say is valid, and I think people have valid interpretations of it otherwise. But I think the important thing, I mean, I think the importance of book or movie like The Da Vinci Code is to get people thinking and talking about these subjects and making religion relevant and alive in our time.
Would Jesus have been a prophet and a son of man, and people are trying to turn him into some spiritual son of God, and Jesus is trying to point out it's your faith that heals you, I'm the doorway for you, not necessarily that the church is misinterpreting who Jesus really is, but the point would be the same.
Well, I tell you, I'm not a theologian, and so I think anybody can validly try to get their own meaning and understanding from this, and people come out in very different sides of it. That's why there's so many different denominations.
Okay, well, thank you, caller, for that thoughtful question, and let's bring on our next caller. Good morning, caller. Well, I guess we lost them. Into the void. Well, for you just tuning in, we've got a couple of minutes left. We're talking with Dan Wakefield, author of The Hijacking of Jesus. And if you want to get a quick question in, give us a call at 503-231-8187. And while we're waiting to see if someone takes advantage of that, it is interesting, to me, the contrast of what, if one takes from the religious right's various ramblings, the picture they paint of Jesus is, you know, warlike, supportive of greed and self-interest. I mean, it seems to me you couldn't get a more diametrically opposed image. Ah, and I'm here. We have a caller. Good morning, caller. You're on the line.
Yeah, you mentioned the Sermon on the Mount. And one thing that in that, the Jesus preaches against praying in public. So how come Christian churches are always pushing this public prayer thing?
Well, not all Christian churches are pushing a public prayer thing, if you mean in the schools and as part of the government. liberal or progressive denominations, I don't believe, are doing that.
Well, that's what I meant, right.
But, yeah, right.
I mean, Jesus said you should pray in private, go into your apartment, close the door, go in your closet, you know.
Yeah, well, I don't think that's part of the Sermon on the Mount, but it's certainly part of what Jesus told his followers, so you're right about that. I wonder, Dave, if it might be good to close with just reading the things that are in the Sermon on the Mount, if we have time.
If we can take one more caller very quickly, and I think we might have time to do that.
Okay.
Let's move on to our last caller and keep it very quick, caller.
Well, maybe I should have called in. I don't know whether you can answer this or not, but I've been curious about these... when they want to convert people, there are people in recovery groups that keep imposing that Jesus loves you and God loves you. I was wondering what the psychology is. Are these people believing that people don't feel loved by people?
Okay.
Or, okay, since it's the end, I better hang up.
Well, I don't know. I guess some people respond to that. And I guess what I have responded to ever since childhood is the Sermon on the Mount. And maybe we can get in most of it, which says, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God.
And there you have a speed record on the Sermon of the Mount. And that's from Dan Wakefield, author of The Hijacking of Jesus, How the Religious Right Distorts Christianity and Promotes Prejudice and Hate. Highly recommend you go out and get this book. It's a very fascinating and unique view of the situation we find ourselves with the religious right. I want to thank you, Dan, for spending the time here at KBOL this morning.
Thank you, Dave.
And folks should make sure they check in on the appearances. They'll be tonight and through the weekend. We have information at the front desk. So everybody have a good day here in Portland and stay tuned to KBOO.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Next on the Friday Morning Radio Zine is commentary from Jay Thiemeyer.
This is Jay Thiemeyer for KBOO reviewing CSA, a film now playing at the Hollywood Theater through Thursday. Perhaps what says it all is the fact that a restaurant chain, including a site here in Portland, well into the 1980s, continued to feature a giant, shiny-faced, thick-lipped coon face as its entryway. Racism is simply too easy a way to discriminate and demean to expect it will ever disappear. Even in its most virulent form of Aryanism, as depicted in this film, CSA, CSA as in Confederate States of America, as in the Southern slaveocracy won the Civil War. Virulent racism means not merely to belittle in order to feel superior, but that atavistic need to kill in order to feel the superiority. Kevin Wilmot's film is made to appear like a Ken Burns CPB production, which by its conservative treatment underlines the horror of its subject. What if? What if everything we've been conditioned to believe in and accept, everything we know as heroic and meant by God to be, was turned upside down? What if Judah Benjamin, the Confederate emissary to England in the early stage of the Civil War, had succeeded in persuading the UK to involve itself along with France, thereby sealing Southern victory over the industrial North? and the Southern slaveocracy was only one victory away from achieving that alliance. It could very easily have happened. What would our world look like? An old question, especially if you were raised in the South, as I was, during the days of the Earl Warren Court. Racism is always there to be addressed by progressives, always there to be exploited by the other. This imaginative film, so extreme it seems until its conclusion, when we see that all those extremes were in fact reality. The aforementioned coon, just one of several. Nigger hair cigarettes, for instance, were once a great favorite. I remember the Sambo's restaurant on the Strip in Virginia Beach in the mid-70s. Lighten up was the response when it was suggested that it was offensive. Black folks didn't patronize the place after all. And, after all, it's all about economics. King Cotton, as this film illustrates, did, in fact, very nearly win the lottery. Britain, the same kingdom now constituting the handful of willing, align itself with us, it is crucial that we accept this reality, that our government is doing this in our names, that we are the ones who are responsible for the predation of the ragheads. The United Kingdom very nearly allied itself with the South in 63, and that would have meant Southern victory, usurpation of Northern industrial might, and even extension south of the border, which had, of course, already happened as a result of the Mexican War. Go to any lengths to advance slaveocracy. Slavery in the plantation as a unit of economic control would have been imposed on the whole Western Hemisphere. Instead of the OAS, there would only have been the CSA. As this film shows, what if is very close, and the American century is becoming so yesteryear. And then there's that Duke LaCrosse incident. Whatever else happens, even if, as seems likely, it becomes another William Kennedy Smith fiasco, one thing is clear. Black women are looking at the world from the way bottom up. What did that Duke student say as the dancer left? A neighbor heard it. "Thank your uncle for my cotton shirt," he said. This film provides another turn on the themes of Aryan entitlement and presumption and the nexus of capitalism with the Protestant ethic. It also underlines that media manipulation of the evidence necessary to good democratic government can come back to bite those citizens and that government, that unintended consequences can pervert the purest designs, the words turned inside out. The danger is to dismiss not just this film, but the general design of a racist, corporatist, pseudo-Christian society. Just look at this administration's use of the welfare system, or what remains of it, to control the lower class, disproportionately people of color, with its potential for real social revolution. They are fed less and less and kept squabbling with each other for the crumbs instead of organizing on common ground. Or, as with the Project Homeless Connect, the degrading are kept bowing and scraping in gratitude for what crumbs they're doled, while politicians preen and pose, the beneficiaries of a racist social mold not fundamentally distinguishable from the plantation, slaveocracy is depicted in this film. This is a very thought-provoking editorial cartoon, not at all far from our reality. The Rose Festival features such lovely managed young women, some of color, some so compliant, such a showpiece of how enlightened our city is. While low-income folks are being gentrified out of their neighborhoods, the people of color who can't afford a place to live are displaced out of sight. Only the date changes. Racism is a chameleon. It serves, as it always has and always will, the corporate agenda, ready-made and cocked for the Karl Rove's of the world to exploit. There are some memorable scenes in this film of Semites on the reservation with predictable apologists, a scene of an African chief before the Summit of Nations in lieu of the UN, extolling the virtues of a global trade in slaves, his bounty based on selling unruly inferior tribes from the Dark Continent's interior, the global trade resurrecting the CSA economy during the worldwide depression of the 30s. Interesting treatment of figures like John Kennedy, who prior to assassination in the film was pushing for emancipation of the slaves. The 60s, Vietnam, the riots in Watts, all grist for the filmmaker's imaginative will, depressingly close to the bone. Racism lives usually just out of sight, and PC cosmetics only serves to distract. The screening I attended was without any people of color, enjoying the Rose Festival, no doubt. CSA is showing through Thursday at Hollywood Theater. For information, call 503-281-4215. This is Jay Thiemeyer for KABU.
Hi, I'm Hallie.
And I'm Zoe.
We're from Gilkey International Middle School.
And you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Every breath you take, every call you make, every bite of steak, for our nation's sake, we'll be watching you. Every single day, we'll check your dossier. We see where you pray, what you buy, what you pay, because we're watching you. Oh, can't you see? It's called security. You've got to trust us too, because we don't trust you. On us your life depends. We wanna know your friends. We won't make amends. Our means have noble ends, and we'll be watching you. We must succeed. No warrant do we need. If you don't let us in, the terrorists will win. When freedom gets off track,
when freedom gets off track,
it's hard to get it back.
It's hard to get it back.
So till the next attack, you know we're on your back, and we'll be watching you.
And we'll be watching
everything you do.
Everything you do.
We have our eyes on you.
We have our eyes on you.
You and your whole crew.
You,
we got a bird's eye view, and we'll be watching you.
And we'll be watching
every breath you take.
Breath you take,
every call you make,
every
bite of steak, it's for our nation's sake. We'll be watching you.
We'll be watching you.
When freedom gets off track,
and that was Chop Liver Productions by Janice Lieber. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Stay tuned for Chris Andre.
Good morning. It is just about seconds away from 10:30 a.m. You're listening to your community handmade, homegrown, free-range radio, KBOO, 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon.